This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 18th of October 2014 on Monocle 24.
New releases, burgeoning titles, and trusty coffee table companions. We ponder over some of the new issues that are making it to the newsstand or to your letterbox, freshly printed and primed, ready for distribution. This episode of The Stack is ready to hit the shelves. On The Stack today, we look at a new sports magazine that's trying to break the mould, food for thought from Australia and China, plus fashion and football titles from the UK, all with an expert friend and independent magazine specialist. Plus, we'll meet the editor of an influential American magazine whose fortunes are bucking the trend.
We thought, as we're going faster and faster online, maybe we should go slower and slower in print. And so we reconceived the magazine and as a more visual, more deep, and truly just fuller experience.
All that and much more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. I'm delighted to be joined by one of our good friends on the show, Steve Watson, founder of innovative magazine distributor Stack, stackmagazines.com. He's also written for and edited magazines over the last 10 years. So welcome back to the show, Steve. Great to see you as always. We have a, I don't know how to describe it, a plethora, a host,
a
variety,
mess of magazines.
A mess of magazines. And I think we should launch, maybe let's launch straight in. Why don't you pick out one of the titles that you've brought with you? I know we are delving into, we've got food, fashion, football. Let's start with one of those. Where should we begin?
Okay, so I'm really impressed at the moment by Scrag End, which is a food magazine from Australia. I believe that issue zero came out about a year ago. This is issue one, and this is actually the first time I'd seen it. It's kind of slightly off A5 style, very kind of journal based, but just has the most fantastic stories, brilliantly told, really nicely put together with this. I'm a big fan of Australian publishing because I think that no matter what they're doing, you get this kind of very no-nonsense tone that just undercuts everything. It's kind of like, in this, they're at great pains to point out that, you know, they're not airy-fairy kind of, you know, these guys lefty sort of thinking that the food industry should be different. They're like, look, these are real producers doing real things and we're making a mess of it in the mainstream. It's just really great.
And it's interesting because I think a lot of people are interested in this sort of slow movement approach to food and food production. And also it kind of influences the magazine side, but there's still a lot of sort of glossy food titles that are interested in the slow production, but don't necessarily bring that into their own production process.
Right,
This is a lot more like that. Very, as you say, very sort of understated, and they have these kind of washed out images and some really good pieces in here. Look at these whiskey casks. You can almost kind of smell the places that are depicted, can't you?
Yeah, well, which in some cases is not a good thing.
or a cow farm, maybe not.
There's lots of really great first-person stuff there. So they get kind of farmers to and producers to write from their perspective. And it basically is kind of saying that, you know, because of the way that food production systems work, the food gets made out in the regions, it'll get shipped into cities, picked over. The stuff that isn't wanted gets shipped back out to regions. So these guys who are like, you know, making amazing stuff have a terrible diet because they can't get hold of the great quality food stuff that is actually being made in the regions.
Amazing stuff. A meatsmith's revolution.
Exactly, yeah.
I love it. I think that's really nice. I think there's something sort of agreeably compact about it. You almost feel like you could sort of have that at the table with you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Be browsing through whilst eating a sort of quality steak or something like that.
Exactly. The only thing for me is that I wish the cover stock was a little bit thicker because already it's starting to curl.
It's getting the curl. But that's almost charming in a way. It's like sort of like an old school exercise book or something.
Yeah, but I'm very careful with my magazines. You know, I like to keep them nice.
Lovely stuff. So that's Scrag End. Very nice. That's a good positive jumping off point.
Mm.
Now, we mentioned we were cycling through some of the F's. Fashion as well. What's caught your eye?
So Pilot magazine is a new fashion magazine that's come out. high concept, which I always think is really interesting. So the, you know, kind of high concept, are they going to completely fall on their faces or make a fist of it? The concept in this one is that they only use analog photography and they will never retouch for beauty. So when I heard about this magazine, I thought, oh, okay, so here's someone who's aiming for some kind of like greater sense of authenticity. But actually, that's not the case at all. What they're doing is creating these sort of like fashion fantasy images, but they're very interested in the craft of how you actually do that in the camera, in the room, rather than processing it through a machine afterwards. Mm. And so they do some stuff like kind of the cover is wet plate and photographers, you know, kind of what you associate with like, you know, Victorian era black and white shots, but they've kind of obviously done it in a very modern way. And then you also get shoots in there which I would not know by looking at them whether they were shot digitally or on film. And actually Max, the guy behind it, was saying that's a big part of it, because he wants to get away from this idea of analog photography as this kind of, as sort of like an indie kind of style. And yeah, he wants to show that actually you can do anything you want with analog.
And you can take sort of mainstream images. Now, you're right. I think maybe it's because it's that slight blurred lines of the era that the images look like they've come from. They have, it's a sort of slightly kind of dreamy kind of look to some of the images.
I really like it. And I think it picks up on something that, you know, you mentioned kind of slow food movement just then. In independent publishing, again and again, you come across the idea of slowing down in order to do something more thoughtfully and kind of take notice of what you're doing rather than just churning it out. And so I think it's great that they're doing that in this magazine without necessarily saying, look, you know, we're being very slow about this. It's just what they're doing. You know, you get lots of mags at the moment that run stories on artisanal coffee makers because it's all about slowing down and making this coffee in a very slow way. So, yeah, okay, interesting. But this is doing, it's taking the same approach, but to a totally different subject.
It just intrigues me that in their sort of cover little sort of tagline, they actually say explicitly, you know, celebrating analog fashion photography with zero beauty retouching. It almost sounds like the strapline you get on like a radio commercial. do you think that maybe betrays a slight doubt that there's a clarity of the vision of the magazine? Did that need to be there? Or do you think it's, in a way, it's kind of good to advertise it because it's like we're doing it exactly what we say on the tin, to use another advertising.
I think that they were like, you know, it's basically two people who have set up a brand new fashion magazine and they're probably a little bit worried about how do they take on the incumbents. And so the thing they're fighting on is this, as I say, it's high concept. So yeah, they're sticking it front and center.
Let's, I've got a few magazines of my own, Steve.
You have.
And let's keep with the F. It's an F off. Let's call it that today. I've got the new issue of Fat. Do you want to dive into that? Because I know you're...
Let me touch it.
Can I call you a fan if we stick with all of these F words?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I first came across Casino Creative Studio, who made Casino A4. So I came across that years ago, loved that. And then, you know, they've done a few little projects since, really like that. And then so the first Fat came out last year. That was really cool. I've not actually seen this one yet. So this is the first
it's a treat for you.
I'm getting a look.
So we sort of were at the launch last year at Finish, of course, mm-hmm. and you know, just to keep the F's coming. What's your first view then? Because I always like to, if I see a magazine aficionado getting a first look, you know, the eyes light up. I can see you there. It's like a child on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
Has it delivered? Has Santa delivered with this one?
I mean, the thing, I've got no idea what this story is about, but there's a picture of Donald Duck as like sort of a superhero character, like in a painting. I want to read that story. This is what Fat do really
It certainly demands attention.
Yeah.
So, thumbs up. And it says oops in the middle in a big sort of red circle. We don't know why. We don't know why at this
Who
stage.
Who knows? And I mean, you know, the size of this thing as well. This is going to be like a couple of hundred pages. This is a solid Saturday's reading. I want to take this away basically and get stuck into
it. Maybe we can come to some kind of arrangement about that. Plenty more magazines. Let's have a look at this one, because this is one that I've really enjoyed browsing through this week. A sort of Spanish production. We're going to do another blind taste test now. It's a illustration and graphic arts magazine, but there's interviews with the illustrators, which I always find really interesting. So sometimes, of course, an image must be allowed to speak for itself, but sometimes you kind of want to pick away at the surface a little bit. It's called Mincho. Have a look at that one. What's the first instinct? Because there's some really nice illustration, as perhaps you'd expect.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're making a magazine about great illustration, you know you've got your visuals sorted, right? that's
the easy part.
Exactly, yeah. I think that this reminds me of Wrap, in the, so, you know, obviously they do a very similar thing. And actually, I remember when Wrap first started, I wrote some blog posts kind of saying, like, this looks interesting enough, but it would be nice if they were a bit more magazine-y, because they were literally just like printing illustrations and then Q&As with illustrators. And actually, over the years, they've done that. It looks like this. So is this issue one?
Yeah, which this is
issue two.
We're near to the jumping off point. But it sort of veers away from being that slightly kind of almost catalogy look, and it's much more of a proper read.
They look like they're doing more with it right from the start. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This is something so Fat is Saturday, so maybe this is Saturday evening. So, okay, let's keep
the whole weekend going. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. My guest is Steve Watson from Stack Magazines. And, we're going to continue delving into our own stacks as the show continues. Up next, though, we're going to be hearing from Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Stay tuned.
There are lots of chunky themes running through the new October issue of Monocle. We survey the world of modern diplomacy. We send our autumn style guide down the editorial runway, deliver part two of our retail survey, and publish our fresh-faced guide to Auckland and New Zealand. Yes, it's a big action-packed issue, and here are our editors to tell you more about what to expect this month. In the design section, we head to Greece to report on a new wave of architects that has come out of the crisis with a newfound patriotism and a keen ambition to help the nation back onto its feet. We then meet the bright lights of Brooklyn, the key players in the borough's increasingly world-class lighting industry, and then the new young upstart on Copenhagen's design scene. And then we cozy on down in two jealous-making homes, a Bauhaus villa in Alsace and a summer house in Menorca.
In the edit section, we check out an age-old Portuguese porcelain maker building a business to last. Head to the Estonian capital to visit a portside suburb on the up and sit down with Martha Stewart for her perfect meal. We also survey the best in travel from New York to Jakarta and this month's foodie finds from Singapore to Sao Paulo.
The October issue of Monocle is on newsstands now. Why not become a subscriber? Head to monocle.com to find out how.
Last month, Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Adam Moss, editor of New York Magazine, at the Modern Magazine Conference. New York's redesign, as well as its conversion to twice-monthly frequency, have been hot topics, so Fernando heard the latest from the man behind this apparently successful change of course.
In March, we went from being a weekly to a biweekly, which was in part a financial decision, but also reflected what we felt was the changing way people were reading, and that we, as well as everyone else, was giving them information and content and diversion constantly on the internet, and that the weekly magazine didn't have the same meaning in people's lives that it maybe once did. And so we thought, as we're going faster and faster online, maybe we should go slower and slower in print. And so we reconceived the magazine and as a more visual, more deep, and truly just fuller experience.
But at the same time, you also mentioned that you have those kind of spin-off issues, like, for example, the special about health and weddings, and those are doing quite well.
They are, yeah. So then there's this this whole other world that we were in a little bit, but we're going in bigger way, which is to create these magazines all centered around a single subject. So health was one of them, and not too long we're doing something on food and drink, and then we're doing something that is oddly a project that excites me a great deal, which is about gifts, just because we're doing it in a sort of cool way.
And another thing, of course, we're here in London. I mean, even though New York is very closely associated with the city, but it feels quite an international magazine. You have quite a lot of international readers. Do you think about those kind of readers as well when you edit the magazine?
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the great benefits and joys of digital life is that digital distribution has no geographic boundaries, so that anybody who wants to read our content can read it. They can read it here in London. They can read it in Beijing, as well as across the United States. And that's a huge change, because it used to be that the magazine itself was physically limited in its distribution. And that's not the case anymore. So as we put everything online, and as it became clearer and clearer that the actual audience a potential audience was international, we began to change the content as well. So the subject of the magazine was not New York City per se, but more a New York way of looking at the world that might be appreciated, we hope, in other cities.
Finally, I just want to talk as well about the design of the magazine and the website in general. I mean, it's incredible, the infographics. I think it's a very famous thing when you think about New York. How do you work with your graphic team or your design team?
Well, they're super talented, and basically everything happens so fast, even in a biweekly and certainly online, that it's all about speed, and people do. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of creating Bibles or kind of instruction booklet about what to do. It's basically that people just get inspired by each other, and there's a kind of contagion of ambition and of kind of a visual language, and it just happens by itself.
Steve Watson from Stack Magazines is still with me here on this week's Stack. Hearing from Fernando there, chatting with Adam Moss, the editor of New York Magazine. I know you'd caught up with Adam as well fairly recently. And interesting to sort of compare the scenes, big cities, big magazine culture, but quite different dynamics. And I know that Adam had something to say about that, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of he was the star of the show at the Modern Magazine Conference, kind of one of these people who is just able to be incredibly switched on and a nice guy at the same time. And one of the things he was saying afterwards...
I hate people like that.
I know, don't you just hate it? He was saying afterwards that, you know, because he'd literally just like landed in London a couple of days before, and he was really struck by the fact that here in London we have a real kind of independent magazine scene with a lot of people doing a lot of stuff and people coming together and doing things. And in New York, they don't really see that so much. There was a sort of like a small band of independent publishers trying to do something, but I don't think it's kind of really caught hold over there.
Why do you think that happens, Steve? What is it about London? Because there is almost, sometimes there's almost palpable sense of that. Is it just the way people engage with their newsstand? Is it something about the ease of doing business? Because you wouldn't have imagined that there'd be too many really stark contrast between East Coast of the US and here. But any insights that you might have?
I mean, I guess you know, you look at it and you've got someone like Jeremy Leslie, who has been here for years, kind of banging the drum for independent magazines. That's not going to hurt anything. And then I guess you look at the media generally, in the US, you've got like, you know, the West Coast, the East Coast, kind of people doing different things, different places. Over here, it really is all about London. And, you know, sure, like, you know, Bristol has got interesting stuff going on, and Manchester and Nottingham now. But, you know, kind of still it all comes back to London. So I think we're maybe a little bit more centralised. And maybe there's something about, you know, kind of people are wedded to print here in a way that they aren't in other parts of the world. It's very difficult to say why.
It is indeed. Fascinating insight. So let's continue with our browse through some of these magazines. I'm going to do some more of this really is a blind taste test of sorts, because I've got a...
I'm not going to make lick it.
I've got a...
Oh, no, okay.
Yeah, it's a sort of scratch and sniff version. This is a journal picked up. A number of our Monocle staff have been in Japan recently. We've just recently opened a new bureau in Tokyo. And so obviously there's all sorts of treats that make their way back. It's very exciting. And I want you to have a look at this. This is the craft beer book. I think this is an absolute thing of beauty. What's your take?
I get a little bit confused by the Japanese fetishization thing. I mean, clearly there are good-looking magazines that come over, but I'm flipping through this and there are lots of Japanese characters which kind of look intriguing. wish I knew what it said. But then there are lots of like cutouts of bottles of beer and things, and I just sort of think, well, yeah.
Seen once. See, I could browse through that. I could browse through that magazine all day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd say I'll swap that for Fats. Oh no, they're both yours. I can't swap one of those.
We'll have to. Well, I'm sure we can come to some kind of range. It's interesting actually that you mentioned that, because another one of our sort of favourites, I know that our creative director is a fan of, is Go Out. And that again has this almost slightly kind of cataloguey feel. I don't know whether you have the same instinctive reaction to this one. And they have some of these supplements. This is the Living Gear book that I have here as well, which is again, you know, some beautiful photography, like top drawer interiors, lots of, you know, beautifully photographed lighting as well. Would they grab you, Steve, at the newsstand, or I sense that you're more drawn to maybe, you know, it's got traditional favorites, like looking at Pilot, real kind of that is a cover that's gonna, you know, make a bit, maybe a bit more of an impact, do you think, than these?
So I'm looking at Go Out, and immediately there's more going on than there is in the craft beer book. So this kind of reminds me a little bit more of the likes of kind of Popeye, where you're getting lots of like layered images with with captions next to them. Kind of, you know, again, I wish I could read what these things are saying, but there's more happening there. And then, so go out the living gearbook.
You're like the kind of man who'd like to peruse the living gearbook, wouldn't you?
I love living gear. You know, I need to live. Yeah, you know, again, it's so difficult to say because, you know, this stuff could be the most fascinating thing ever, but without being able to read it, you just
The barriers of entry, aren't they, sometimes? It's very difficult for us. Maybe we all need to learn Japanese. Now, let's move on, because to continue our F off, I'm sticking with that. We did say we talk about football. I know we got a couple of other sporting titles as well. Give Me Sport was one that I was kind of browsing through this week. What was your early instinctive thing to this? I mean, I looked through and they've got a special page looking at, you know, the evolution of World Cup football stickers. But yeah. To my mind, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
Hit or a miss, I guess, to add a sporting metaphor.
So I picked up Gimme Sport a few weeks ago. And I'm always really excited to see a new sports magazine come out because I think it is, you know, it's a subject matter that's underserved in the mainstream, or at least not done terribly well. And at first was really excited by this because it looks really great. But then I started reading it and it just kind of, I think it just needs tightening up editorially. I think that there are a lot of the stories that start out with an interesting kind of conflict. So, for example, there's a story on the rise of the WWE with an amazing picture of Hulk Hogan on the right-hand side of the spread. And it's like, yep, this is for me. But then you start reading it and actually the story doesn't have that direction to it. It kind of sets you up and then goes on a bit of a walk around the houses and then you come back to the where you started from again without having been really taken
the problem
on
of
a
the,
journey
the problem
with
of
it.
The meander.
Exactly,
perhaps.
Yeah.
But is this the kind of thing, because I know I think we've talked before a little bit about the early days of magazines and that kind of necessary learning curve and, you know, learn by doing, we'd all say that's a pretty good idea. Is it almost kind of necessary, do you think, to maybe have those maybe little meanders, even if they're slightly off course, just to kind of make sure that you're on the right track? Or do you think there needs to be a bit more tautness from the get-go?
I think that that's a tough way to learn. I think that, you know, kind of when you're experimenting and, you know, unfortunately, I think this stuff works better with design than editorial because, you know, especially these days, you know, like you can like pull things around on a page and experiment and play around with it. There are certain things that you need to do with a written story to be able to keep your readers and bring them with you. This reads like a magazine that I think has got a lot of passion behind it, but it could just do with maybe a little bit more experience in terms of shaping the stories and you know, giving them that direction.
Interesting case notes there, Steve. Let's then look at a sports title that I think you maybe sort of think as a bit more on target. clunky football metaphor
word,
coming up. And this is Rabona. Tell us a little more.
Yeah, so Rabona, a football magazine, this is issue 3. And again, it's one that I just stumbled across. I haven't seen issues 1 and 2. This is the USA issue, so looking at football in the USA. And it's got Tim Howard on the cover, which, you know, obviously, if you're talking about USA football at the moment, he's your man.
He chats with Obama on the phone, you know.
Really?
He got a call of congratulations.
Oh, okay.
During some World Cup heroics.
Fair enough.
As an aside.
But so then the stories in Rabona do exactly that thing I was just talking about in terms of they approach their subjects from several different angles. So they talk about kind of the importance of grassroots work with kids in the US so that the MLS isn't just this kind of retirement home for international stars and, you know, kind of the ambition they want for that. I think that a magazine that, you know, kind of like approaches its subject in that many different ways, that's going to really kind of hold my attention and take me with it.
And it's quite interesting because there's definitely sort of some pretty, as you said, pretty focused journalism. They've got a sort of almost sort of forensic look through, as you mentioned, the sort of MLS, some of the big figures. And quite sort of some nice kind of infographics as well. So pictorially, in some of these images, I detect a bit of a doff of the cap to the Green Soccer Journal, another one of the sort of football titles. And it's interesting, of course, Rabona being a sort of a footballing technique.
Maybe, is it really? What is a Rabona?
It's a sort of a delivering a kick of the ball where you sort of wrap one foot round the other. I don't know if I described that very well. Ricardo Infante was the first experiment.
Okay.
But there have been some players have tried it to less success, David Dunn, most notably. So in your view, is one of these magazines the Infante, the originator, and the other the David Dunn, the stumbler? Or do you think there's room on the scene for these two and maybe a host more in the football marketplace?
I'm sure that there's plenty of room for Rabona and Green Soccer Journal and plenty of others too. Green Soccer Journal, of course, has that real kind of focus on fashion. The thing that they do really well is taking a football star who's obviously, you know, that you can see these guys are not fashion models. They don't
whatever can you mean?
I think that the real skill with Green Soccer Journal is in terms of like putting those guys at their ease and making them think they're not going to make them look ridiculous, basically, in a magazine. With Rabona, I think that the real skill is in that storytelling and kind of that's where I get excited about Rabona, because of that depth of the storytelling.
Profound storytelling. That's one of the things that we always like to celebrate here on The Stack, and I think that's a pretty good point on which to wrap up. Steve Watson, thanks as always for coming on to The Stack and guiding us through some of your insights into the world of magazines.
Thanks very much for having me.
And that brings us to the end of this 112th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks to our guest, Stephen Watson, and of course to our producer, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, Claire Arbarn. Questions, comments, queries are all welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com, and don't forget, we'll be back next Saturday at the very same time. You can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud in the meantime. But for this week's edition of The Stack and me, Tom Edwards, that's all. Goodbye.